And we're with paranormal researcher Jeff Danilak. We'll take your phone calls with Jeff next on Coast to Coast AM. Jeff, how do you pick the subjects that you go after when you research?
Well, you know, I really don't know where I get them from. Just all of a sudden, one will occur to me, or some situation or experience will come along that says, hey, this is something I could investigate. I remember one time I had a call from a radio host. He says, you did a book on UFOs, right? And I said, no, I never even thought about doing a book on UFOs.
And so, bingo, right?
And it's like, where did this guy? And then, like about 3 months later, I suddenly found myself starting to work on one. So sometimes they just kind of fall in my lap out of nowhere. I have no idea where they come from.
Next up, let's go to the calls. Landon in Houston, Texas, first time caller. Hi, Landon.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Yeah, I'm glad to be calling in, first time.
Super.
You know, I had a theory about ghosts, and I've had this for a while, and I thought I'd go ahead and share it with you guys.
Okay.
Well, the typical, you know, idea we have about ghosts is that they're the spirits of the dead, right? Well, I've kind of been studying this stuff for a few years now, and my idea is you have different kinds. You have different expressions of the other side, if you want to call it that. So you have the part of you that is consciousness that passes on and you know, it seems to express itself, you know, in a way that is not physical. But you also have different ways or other kinds of apparitions, and some of them are not even apparitions. For example,
maybe like different levels.
Well, you have the people that are still conscious that have moved away from the physical and are still conscious and are interacting in some way. But then you have situations where you're in, like, say you go to a haunted house, or you go to some forest or something that is apparently, you know, very, very strong in energy. And a lot of times from what I've noticed is that they're not necessarily aware. It's like an energy stamp in a way. It's like a repetitive memory of some kind.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. You're talking about the residuals. Which are ghosts that are not interactive. It's almost like they're stuck in a time loop, and they're just replaying a scene over and over again. Is that what you're talking about?
How many cases like that, Jeff?
That's actually very common, residuals. So most ghost hunters look at hauntings in two different types, residuals or intelligent. So an intelligent haunting is where you're interacting with something. It's walking around, it's answering questions, rapping on the wall, whatever. And then the residuals is where the entity can be maybe seen or even photographed, but it doesn't seem to be aware of you. It doesn't seem to know like you're there. So it's almost as though there's an activity that has been imprinted into the environment, like, say, people playing pool. And all of a sudden, you know, you'll hear pool balls out there in this abandoned pool hall. And you go out there and there's nobody there. What you're actually hearing is a moment of time, maybe 40 years ago, that somehow is imprinted into the environment. So in that respect, it's not actually a ghost. It's not really an actual personality. It's more of an event that was caught by the environment and has replayed over and over again under the right circumstances.
What about different tiers or levels of these ghosts?
Well, in my book, I don't really differentiate between different types of human ghosts. I differentiate between humans and non-human entities, which I call extra-celestials. Those would be your spirit guides and maybe your demons and stuff like this. And then there's also apparitions, which are non-human objects that appear. For example, the Flying Dutchman, that ship, you know, the
oh, yeah, great story.
Itself. Or an airplane that suddenly appears that's like a ghost airplane. So there does seem to be a category of non-human or non-organic type of apparitions, too. So there's a whole range of them in that respect.
Let's go to Renee in Vancouver, Canada, on the international line. Good morning, Renee.
Hi, how are you guys?
We're great.
Good. I just have a couple of questions. First of all, can ghosts, like, follow you from, like, one location to another? And second of all, what does it mean exactly when you see orbs kind of floating around and then they're trying to, like, come at you and you can actually feel, like, wind brushing by you and then they kind of just come and go? So those are my two questions.
Wow. Well, your first question is, yes, I do think that an energy can follow you around. I think that just like you can get a guy who stalks you, you can get a ghost that stalks you, you know? As far as seeing orbs with your own eyes and having them, you know, are they, like, actually hitting you on your body?
Renee?
I can feel, like, waves. Like, I can feel, you know, when something brushes by you, you can feel the air of it.
That's unusual. I haven't come across that really before, where people were actually interacting with these energy forces. I've had people who have seen orbs once in a while, but in terms of actually getting energy off of them, that's pretty amazing. But I suppose there could be something to that. It could also be that you have a sensitivity to these things that other people don't. So maybe they're out there, but most people just don't notice them. But
Jeff,
maybe for some reason you can.
Don't you think most orb pictures are reflections from flash and things like that?
Yeah, I do. Of course, she's not talking about a photograph.
No.
I think she's talking about actually seeing these things with her own eyes. But, yeah, I think 99% of orb photos that you get are actually just dust particles or insects that are catching the reflection of the flash. But I have also seen a couple. I have one on my site that is pretty compelling. I have a picture a lady sent me of an orb that she shot in a house that she was showing. She was a realtor. And, you know, the house was basically empty. It just had furniture, but there was nobody living there. And there was this bright orb, and it actually reflects light onto the wood below it. It's like a foot off the ground, and you can see a white glow underneath it, where it's like it's an internally illuminated ball. And I thought, that's very interesting, because I would have easily dismissed it as a speck of dust, except for that fact that it reflected light.
Okay, let's go to Bruce in Glen Burnie, Maryland, east of the Rockies. Hi, Bruce, you're up.
Hi, thanks a lot for taking my call.
Sure.
Nearly every near-death experience says that they see a white light that's very comfortable. Sometimes there are people there to greet them.
Mm-hmm.
So why would someone be afraid to cross over if there's a white light and a real comfortable white light that's kind of telling you to come in, or sometimes they tell you to leave? Why would someone be afraid to cross over?
Well, that's a good question. We don't know, first of all, that everybody experiences this. We're just getting the stories from people who have actually come back. There might be a sense that, you know, you're so attached to things behind that you may not want to move on. You know, the light might beckon you, but if you still feel like you have unfinished business or something like that, or maybe you're afraid of being judged. Maybe that you would interpret this white light as being God, and you think you've done some bad things in your life, so you may not want to approach it because you think it might do something to you.
Remember the lady in the Poltergeist movie? She, the little short lady, she kept saying, don't go into the light, to the spirits.
Yeah.
I could never understand that. I always thought you wanted to. I guess she figured once you go into the light, you don't come back.
I think that's probably generally the case. People who do actually say, oh, okay, nice light, I'll head towards it. And that's, you know, then they move into the spiritual realm. So you're probably right that there might be some compelling reason not to do it, or at least an immediate reason not to. Remember the movie Ghost with Patrick Swayze?
Sure do. Classic.
He had several opportunities to go into the light, but he stayed because he had some unfinished business to do.
What were those horrible creatures that came up with the robes, those dark robes? What were they, huh?
Yeah, that was kind of scary. Yeah, they all the hissing and all that stuff.
Is that real?
I believe that you can create these different visions for yourself from your own mind. So if you're expecting maybe to see a hellish experience, I think you might be able to manufacture it. I don't think it's an external reality, but I do believe that people create these things in their own mind. There's been a few near-death experiences in which people have come back claiming that they were, you know, being tortured in hell. I mean, they're rare, but there have been a few experiences like that. So I do believe that there is a link between what you expect to see and what your mind is creating or generating.
Denver, Colorado. Hello, Teresa. It's your turn on Coast to Coast.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good. I love all you guys over at Coast to Coast.
Well, thank you. We love you, too.
Thank you.
Teresa from Denver. That's where I'm from.
Oh, okay. Okay, very cool.
Super.
I have a ghost story for you guys.
All right.
Okay. Well, we were living over in Southeast Denver, and I put my daughter to bed and laid her in our bed, and she was sleeping pretty good, and all of a sudden she started screaming like bloody murder, and I went in to go check on her, and she seemed to have had a nightmare, so I went and laid with her, and I was laying there, and something came up and pushed me on my shoulder, and so I was totally freaked out, and started saying the Lord's Prayer, you know, until we both fell asleep, and about, I don't know, 3 or 4 in the morning, my husband comes running in the bedroom, and he's screaming at me, saying, you know, why are you trying to scare me? Why are you trying to scare me? And I said, you know, we're asleep. What's wrong? And he said, you know, you're not. You're hiding behind the kitchen counter going, Alice, Alice. And he was shaking in his boots, and my husband is, you know, he's 6 foot, 250 pounds. And so he said, it's okay, honey. You know, come get in bed with us. You'll be safe with us. And about a week later or so, we blessed the house, and I mean, we had, you know, pictures of Jesus turned around and doors slamming, and it was really scary. We ended up moving out of there because we were so scared.
Yeah, I would go too. Did you ever find out though what might have happened there?
Well, I talked to a friend of a friend who's kind of a medium lady, and she said that they were trying to get us to acknowledge them, and I said, well, they weren't doing it very nicely. I was afraid that we needed to get out of there. And so we just got out. We just figured it wasn't worth living through it again.
Would you have stayed, Jeff?
No, actually, I would have talked to the spirit. I would have found out what it wants. If it just wants my attention, then we can usually come to some sort of a compromise. In this case, it sounds like you might be dealing with a mischievous spirit. There are spirits who just enjoy frightening people.
Without harming.
Yeah, they're not. They really have no ability to harm you other than to frighten you. And then people, of course, can hurt themselves when they get scared. They run down the stairs and fall or whatever. But usually these are just, they're just kind of, they're tricksters. They just kind of enjoy doing this sort of thing. Just get a rise out of you. It could have been something more malevolent, though, but since it doesn't seem like it really attacked or anything or pulled your hair or knocked you over, I wouldn't say it's likely a malevolent entity, more like a mischievous spirit.
Great. Thanks, Teresa. Next up, let's go to Houston, Texas. Fayed, welcome to the program. Hi there.
Mr. Jodnori, first of all, I thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I hear your program every night.
Thank you.
And it's a very great program. I would like to share my thoughts, and I have a question also to your guest.
Okay.
First of all, when I was a child, my grandfather, he was a very spiritual man. He used to deal with people who used to be possessed with spirits. And I'm Muslim. We call these spirits as jinns.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And he was a very strong spiritual man, and he had a technique to take out the jinns immediately. And Muslims throughout the world, we believe that jinns can come in different forms. They can disguise the people by different names, and they can lie and all those things.
I've heard of that before, too.
Yeah. And Muslims don't believe that after a person dies, he can come back in the form of ghost and play with the human beings. So my question to the guest is, if a person dies and if he has the ability to come back, why not the great scientists or great kings or some very great people? Why don't they come back and share their experiences or help the humanity?
Good question.
Well, you know, I think that once a person passes from this life onto the next, I think a lot of the things that were important to them when they were in the physical was no longer that big a deal. A lot of kings and other wonderful people, not all kings are wonderful, of course, but you know, like Mother Teresa and Pope John Paul II and these people like that. I think that once they move on, they're just done with it. You know, they don't really have a desire to come back. And I don't think most of us will once we taste of the spiritual realm. I think we'll be quite happy and quite content to stay there.
And what about reincarnation, Jeff?
Well, I'm a big proponent of reincarnation. As I said, my ghost book was kind of an offshoot of that. But I do believe that the soul, that we have a parent soul that generates multiple personalities in different time frames. Therefore, when we basically pass, the personality is separate from the soul, at least initially, and then eventually it integrates back into it. And the personality is a mortal thing. It has a lifespan, so it doesn't want to pass on because it knows it's going to be absorbed, and it thinks, it's afraid that it's going to cease to exist, where in fact it's only enhancing the soul's overriding personality and being integrated into it to make the next incarnation. So there's a lot of different ideas floating around that. And I always try to see how ghosts fit into the whole reincarnation scheme. And it's still kind of a work in progress.
Let's go to Los Angeles. First-time caller, Ahmed, it's your turn. Hi there.
Hey, sir. Gentlemen, how are you?
Good.
We're good.
The other gentleman stole my thunder with the jinns, but I wanted to kind of elaborate more on his story, because the jinn story or the jinn teachings, it kind of gives you the origins of the Satan and the devil, and how he was a jinn, and how you know, the creation of man and creation of angels or not. But as you know, I researched other things, and you know, in researching faith, you know, I of course had my own encounters with I guess we call them shadow people. You know, like people that are just basically made of shadows, and they interact with you, and they walk. Like I had one walking towards me, and it was a pretty creepy thing, but. It really got me into thinking more scientifically, and I researched a lot into quantum physics and parallel universes and like multiple dimensions. And if you read into the text, you know, people take text literally, but what I read into it was jinns basically exist in another dimension. They can see us, but we can't see them, and they can interact with us, and we can interact with them if they allow us to.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to know if, during your research, you know, you've come across anything like that where, you know, there's good jinns, there's bad jinns, but it's a possible explanation for ghosts. I mean, it may not always be like a relative. It may not always be a spirit that has passed. Have you come across anything like that in your research?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of ghosts that nobody knows who they are. You know, sometimes they're familiar ghosts or people that you know who they were when they were alive, and then other times you just meet a stranger. But in terms of good and bad jinns, let me just say that I think that each religion interprets these entities in their own language, their own vocabulary. You know, in Islam, you might refer to them as jinns. In Christianity, they're probably referred to as demons or angels. So I think they're all talking about the same thing, which is this kind of plethora of different energies out there. And we give them different titles and so that we can understand them in our own spirit, in our own cultural context. But in the end, I think they're all basically talking about the same thing, and they all pretty much operate the same way.
Jeff, when we come back, we'll take final calls with you. Jeff's website, ourcuriousworld.com. We've been talking about his latest works, UFOs, The Great Debate, and also The Case for Ghosts. I'm George Norrie, and we'll be back with your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, Dr. Larry Dossey joins us as he talks about his latest work on premonitions and how the mind is much more powerful than conventional science truly reports. Jeff, how many people have called you J. Allen Hynek by mistake?
I think that's what the guy was thinking about when he asked me if I had written a UFO book.
Yeah.
You know, and I had no intention whatsoever of writing one at that point, and within a year later, I had one already at the publisher.
Now, so. Your parents didn't name you after J. Allen Hynek, did they?
No, they named me after Jeff Chandler and Alan Ladd.
Alan Ladd. Candid Camera. I remember that show.
No, that's Alan Funt.
Oh, that's right. Alan Ladd was the actor.
Yeah,
who always would stand on some kind of a box or a milk carton whenever they did a shooting with him.
That's right. He was a pretty short guy. I'm always thankful though my parents weren't into like Ren Tin Tin and Lassie though.
But Alan Funt, that's right. Candid camera for him. You're right. Yeah, you could have been named after him too. You never know.
Who knows?
Sunnyville, California. Let's go to final phone call. Steven, it's your turn on Coast to Coast. Hey, Steven.
Thanks. I wanted to ask your guest if he had any experience in his research with anybody seeing a ghost of somebody that's actually still alive. I had an experience.
Now, that's interesting. Tell me what happened to you.
Well, it was a long time ago, but I remember it vividly. And it was my younger brother walking down the hallway. We were spending the night at my grandmother's house. And it was probably, I don't know, 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. And I could hear him walking down the hallway because they had a straw mat on this hallway area. You couldn't help but hear anybody walking. It was very noisy. It used to bother everybody. But anyway, I sat up because I saw him coming down the hallway rather slowly. He looked kind of like he was sleepwalking or something. And I called out his name to kind of snap him out of a little bit, but not loud enough to wake up the whole household. And he did not respond, but he kept walking, almost like he was dragging one arm against the wall, like he was, you know, I thought he was maybe sleepwalking. And I yelled a little bit louder and louder, and then finally I noticed that I could see the heater vent through his pajamas. And then I noticed both, you know, like the lower part of his limbs, his legs and his arms were a little bit transparent. And that started to scare me. I was 10. He was 7 years old. I didn't have any reason to be frightened, really, because I didn't think he was a ghost or anything. He was my brother. But you know, he just was looking kind of right past me and would not respond. So by that time, I sat up and I yelled his name, woke everybody up in the house. He still wouldn't move, so I ran past him, kind of trying to move out of the way a little bit as I went past him. And I did kind of like feel, I didn't feel him brushing against me or anything, just kind of this cool, wet mist or something. And so the whole thing just really kind of freaked me out. When I turned the corner at the end of the hallway, I saw him in his bedroom kind of rolling over to look up at me like, what's going on? And then I jumped into the bed with my older brother, who was rather angry because I woke everybody up. And of course, my grandfather beamed me in the back of the head with one of his shoes as I was ducking under the covers. And the next morning, at breakfast, he said, "What the hell happened last night? You had one hell of a nightmare. Some of you woke everybody up." And so I explained it. I was a little embarrassed, but I was still kind of miffed. Like, you know, to me, it was definitely not a dream. And then my little brother just kind of paused while he's eating his breakfast and said, you know, I must have dreamt 100 times about getting up for some of Grandma's berry juice. He used to make this really nice berry juice from blackberries that we used to pick. This is a long time ago. But I remember this vividly because it kind of helped me develop a theory of sorts of where some of this stuff might come from. I don't have a real good explanation for it other than to say that it's the only time I'd ever seen what some people would describe as the classical ghost apparition or whatever, but and he's still very much alive all these years later. So I just wondered if you have any comment or any other stories you could share.
Okay. I've never heard of this, Jeff. Have you seen a ghost of someone alive?
Yeah, this is actually called a living ghost. It usually happens when people are in some kind of distress. For example, they might be out in a storm or something, hundreds of miles from their family, and all of a sudden they'll show up at some family gathering, even though they're hundreds of miles away. And then they come out of the storm, and they said, I was thinking about you when I was going through this thing, and that was the same time they happened to be there. I think it has something to do with out-of-body experiences. I think that at some point, apparently people in times of great stress or emotional state of some kind seem to be able to actually move out of their physical form and take on another form elsewhere on the planet, or in this case, within the same house. So I've heard of that before.
And that's what people see. They see the astral body, maybe?
Yeah, exactly. But the astral body is being held together by the mind of the person. You know, in other words, that's why they still look like they do. They still have their clothes on and things like that. So it's kind of a complex explanation, but it seems to be something that people have seen before.
Okay, next up, let us go to Michelle in Las Vegas. Hello, Michelle.
Hi, how are you?
Sure thing.
The reason why I was calling is because I have a little bit of a house full of spirits. And I decided after, you know, watching taps and things like that on different shows, and I decided to buy a recorder and start doing EVP recordings in my home. And I had, asked a few questions and whatnot, and one of the ghosts had asked back. He wanted to know if he was going to be forgiven, which is why he didn't even step into the light. He wanted to know if he was going to be forgiven because the other ghost that was standing next to him is telling him that he's going to be going to hell for his past transgressions.
That's exactly what I said. Some ghosts are afraid to move out of that transition zone because they are afraid of judgment. So if you come out of a very religious background where there's a lot of like fundamentalism and fire and brimstone sort of beliefs, and you feel that you have kind of strayed from the path, that might be enough to prevent you from moving into the light, just because you're afraid of the light. You're afraid of judgment. So what you believe in life can impact you in death.
Absolutely. Hey, thanks for the call, Michelle. Next up, let's go to Adrian in San Francisco. First-time caller. Hi there.
Hi there. How are you guys doing?
We're all right.
My question is, my mom passed away recently, and we always kind of joke about how, you know, we'd come back to see each other if, you know, something happened, and I was just wondering, you know, I don't know if I'm just missing any signs, but, you know, she hasn't come back to say hey or anything, and I was just curious, you know, what prevents them from coming back, or, you know, any unfinished business that they want to take care of. How do I look out for her, basically?
Okay, well, that's a good question, because a lot of people want to have some kind of a sign from their past loved ones that they're
sure. They're
around. And sometimes they don't get it. And sometimes I think it's because the loved one has moved on. They feel that you're secure enough in your life that you're going to be able to be okay. Other times it might just be a question of all the circumstances coming together in just the right place. Also, it's a matter of sensitivity, being aware of kind of unusual coincidences happening in your house. Maybe a favorite book your mom had suddenly appears somewhere, or maybe a TV show that she really loved all of a sudden comes on that you weren't really prepared for. It could be very subtle, in other words, so subtle, in fact, that you may not even notice it.
Okay, next up, let's go to Phoenix, Arizona. Mickey, west of the Rockies. Your turn, Mickey.
Hey, so it's kind of bizarre to just jump into this, but from like most of what I'm hearing tonight with the ghost stories and things like that, I believe, well, at one point, from 1994 to 2001, I believe that I myself was dead. I had been mugged on quite a bit of LSD one night, and I thought that over a period of time that it's possible that I had been shot that night. My soul was splintered and fractured, and nothing was going right, blah, 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 a whole lot of things. And I was like, most of what you're talking about tonight were like principles I was living by. Like, that's how I was viewing the world. It was really similar to like Sixth Sense. But that came out way after I was already dealing with it. I had been married even and believed in like, you got to keep working and you still do the whole thing. But like, how do I, like, I don't know. I don't even know how to get into this conversation because it's like experiential. And
yeah.
But you guys are talking about it anyway, but triggered me to call and see if you've heard of anything like that or if
Jeff?
Well, you don't believe you're dead now, though.
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
So what happened to lead you to believe that you're not dead anymore?
I just thought that's insane.
It's just,
it took a long time. I even had a wife that I convinced of this, and I thought we're enabling each other here.
Well, you said you used LSD and stuff, hallucinogenics?
Yes, but yeah.
I think so that'll
put you in an altered state.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What's happening is when you use the psychotropic drugs like that, I think it actually opens up that realm a little bit more. And you can, if you're not prepared to handle it, it can really freak you out. So that might have been some sort of a residual. You're actually touching upon that spiritual realm, and then you're having trouble distinguishing where the physical realm began and where the spiritual realm began. and it took you a while to work your way through it.
Yep, that should be. Time for a few more calls, and we are out of time. Jackson, Mississippi, we go east of the Rockies. Let's go to Robert. Hi, Robert.
Hi, George. Jeff, this is fascinating. Jeff, I heard what you said earlier about ghosts producing sound and how you have to have movement of air. Now, ghosts don't have physical eyes, and since we can't see ghosts, do you think they are able to see us?
Yeah, I think they can, in the same way that we, when you have a dream, you see things and you smell things and you hear things, even though none of those organs are actually active. So in a ghostly realm, they're actually manifesting all of those elements, and they're visual. They're actually seeing things because they're expecting that's what to see. You know, they expect to see that way because that's what they remember from life. So in other words, sight is not just a matter of an organ picking up light. I think it's also more has to do with the brain and how the brain perceives, in this case, how the consciousness perceives its surroundings, and the ghost is just assuming it's seeing through eyes.
Yeah, I wonder what they think when they're watching us.
I don't know. You ever see that movie, The Others, where the ghosts didn't know they were the ghosts?
Yeah, I did.
They thought the people were the ghosts.
That's right.
So maybe it's something like that. I don't know.
Okay.
That's very interesting. Okay, thank you very much.
What's next for you, Jeff? What do you start to investigate?
Well, I have a book coming out in the fall on the 2012 prophecies, Extinction or Utopia. Want to talk about doomsday prophecies, kind of an objective look, you know, how they've fared so well through history. And, you know, maybe what the future holds.
What is your research? Just give us a highlight here, because we'll wait until the book's out to get you back. But what does your research say about 2012 and the fact that so many civilizations talked about prophecy, talked about end times?
I think it's just a natural fear that we all have that, you know, what's going to happen next. It's kind of an offshoot of our... It's a collective offshoot of our fear of death. So we have a social fear of the end times as well. And what my book is trying to do is tell the people that, you know, they thought that the end was coming a lot of times that never did, and maybe the future is going to be more bright than bad. You know, so it's more of an upbeat book that I want to kind of relieve people's fears to some degree.
Okay, next up, let's go to Katy, Texas. Adele, first-time caller. Hey, Adele.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you very much. I listen to you every night. I love it. I love listening to you.
Thanks.
I wish I could meet you. But anyway, my story is in 2004, a guardian angel appeared to me, but this is in my waking state. I'm not asleep. And the first time, you know, I was involved in a police case. It's really bad because the police were whitewashing the case, and this was in 2004. The guardian angel came in, and you know, but I was semi awake during this time, and the guardian angel came in to warn me, you know, that they were trying to set me up with a case. Well, a month ago, the guardian angel appeared to me again. Mind you, this is in my waking state. I am not asleep. And I was sitting by the door in the kitchen. The first time, the guardian angel had a white shirt. The second time, the guardian angel had a blue shirt. And the guardian angel came to tell me, time is of the essence, time is of the essence. You have to do it now. You have to do it now. And last week, they opened up the pedophiler case again. So what can you tell me? Why is this happening to me? Hello?
Yeah, I don't know exactly why it's happening to you. It sounds as though that this entity, however, is watching out for you. And trying to lead you through this situation, but in terms of what it all means is something that you'll have to get, you know, really down and dirty with your guide and this angel and find out exactly what it's trying to tell you.
You know, the first time The first time when I met him, I have to say it was a meeting, you know. It was a cold sweat, and I saw him entering through the front door, even though it's like he puts me in a semi-sleep trance way. You know, I don't know how to explain it. And I started crying, and I asked him, "Are you going to rape me? Are you going to rape me?" And he said, "No, I'm your guardian angel. I have come to help you." And the only way that I was able to, the first time, to get out of this case is I was under surveillance 24/7, and I took a picture of the policeman sitting outside in front of my house because I was really starting to get annoyed. But anyway, And the policeman was sitting in the car reading, in a marked car, you know, in a constable car, reading the paper and eating donuts and drinking coffee. And I went and took a picture of him, and I told him, "If you do not get off my front yard, I will send this picture to every news media." And that is how I got rid of him, but it was because of what the guardian angel had come and told me.
Okay, we've only got about 40 seconds left, Jeff. Guardian angels.
Yeah, well, you know, they're there for a reason. Sometimes they're trying to show you what you need to do. I think sometimes it's really just the higher self that's kind of has a pipeline to God that's trying to help you through these different situations. So you want to be careful and listen to them and see what they say, and just kind of go with your gut instinct and do what you think is right.
That's another book for you, too, by the way, Jeff, Guardian Angels, because I think you would enter an incredible realm if you did something like that.
That would be fun, yeah.
You know, and you can do that. Website, get it out for us, please. What is it?
It's OurCuriousWorld.com.
Can you get your books off the website?
Well, I'll direct you over to the publisher, and you can order through there and get them off Amazon. I also have an email link if you want to send me a note. I'll be glad to respond in a quick manner, and I really enjoy hearing from everybody.
Jeff, and we enjoyed talking with you.
Well, thanks, George. It's been a lot of fun, as it always is.
Jeff Danilak, UFOs, The Great Debate, and also his work, The Case for Ghosts. Fascinating subject, and a pretty cool paranormal investigator. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasur, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy, and Punnett and Ott Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.